This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. You know, when we were going to the break, we just got done very busy 12 o'clock hour. Ryan Schmelz giving us the breakdown on the budget passing process. We've got a bill in the Senate, got a bill in the House. Now they got to figure out how to make it come together so that they can permanent. Is there a verb? Permanize is what I was going to say. And then I was like, back that truck up.
Yeah, let's go with make permanent.
Permify.
No, I think that's like getting a perm.
Permentate.
Yep.
Perm. So they can perm the budget.
Permanentize?
Oh, I'm making stuff
up. Is that what the word would be? Oh. That sounds terrible. I don't want to say permanentize.
I would never say that. I don't know why you're suggesting it.
I'm not. Don't.
How do they make the budget actually stick? How do they make sure that they can come together, that they can get all the things, one big beautiful bill that Donald Trump is very eager, if he has any ink left in those Sharpie pens, to sign more documents, get it done. The joint address to Congress is tomorrow night. Technicality, but it's not a State of the Union, because when you come in your first year, it's not. I think that's because I kind of want to say that Donald Trump should give the State of the Union. I'd like to see him make the State of the Union. But because it's his first speech that he's giving, they have to be invited by Congress. I think that's interesting. The speaker has to invite him into the people's house in order. That's a whole formality. So you get an invitation. If you remember last year, there was kind of some delay on that. Eventually, Joe Biden gave the State of the Union. It was much later than usual. In Donald Trump's 2020 year, I think it was the same thing. There was a little bit of delay. So, joint address to Congress, Speaker Johnson, no delay there, no reason not to get that going. You're going to have Donald Trump delivering the speech below the two people seated behind him, which will be J.D. Vance, who is the president of the Senate, and Speaker Mike Johnson. Three white dudes. It's been a minute.
I didn't know about the speaker having to make a formal invitation to the president then.
Yes, it is an invitation.
That makes Nancy Pelosi tearing up the speech even worse.
2020.
That's unbelievable. So she invited him in, probably had a copy of the speech way ahead of time.
Oh, of course. And that's what it was.
Staged theater to tear it up behind him when he was done.
You ever get those, remember when you were kids? I don't know if they still, I guess they still have this stuff. I haven't seen it in a long time. But you could get like a, from the toy store, like a box of magic tricks.
Yeah.
Like a rope that does things.
Yeah, you can still get those.
Remember the paper you can't tear?
No. Ooh, I like that one.
It's just made out of stuff that you can't tear.
No, I don't remember that one.
They should give Nancy Pelosi a copy of the speech this time. Be like, here you go. Tear it apart.
She goes,
she's biting it.
Or, you know, the
her
older
teeth
you
fall
get,
out.
she's getting pretty up there. Maybe you just give her regular paper that's a thicker grade.
Is this cardstock? Punking me. What do you expect from the Democrats tomorrow at the joint address to Congress?
A lot of whining and yelling.
Do you think they're going to be vocal?
I don't know about in the speech. There will be something that they come up with that's to look protesty. And I don't know what that'll be, because they're not going to bring in signs. But you know how the squad wore all white one year or something like that? It'll be something where they all wear a pin, maybe a Ukrainian flag pin. I bet, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and say that's what they're going to do.
A pin?
Everybody's wearing Ukrainian flag colors on the Democrat side. As a protest.
When Zelensky came and addressed Congress, you might remember there was, I think there was 2 years where, wasn't it Speaker, you had Speaker Pelosi and Kamala Harris back there. So two women sitting back mm-hmm. there. And there's that photo of Zelensky addressing the, addressing Congress, and they have the Ukraine flag draped over the back behind him. There's, you know, when I hear about, when I see something like that, it's very easy to look at something like that in the context of this very minute that we're in right now and be like, oh, come on. You don't need to put the Ukrainian flag in the United States of America's House of Representatives to support the people who are being attacked by Russia. You don't need, is that a level of symbolism? And I'm thinking to myself, flip it. Go to the converse. If we were watching, I'm not going to put it in Ukraine because they're not the same as we are. But if you went to a place like, if you went to Parliament in the United Kingdom or what, Great Britain or whatever it is, and we were being attacked by Canada, just flip the whole script here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Great Britain, United States,
in a long drawn out war,
Russia, Canada. Do you catch my drift? I'm okay with Canada, people. I have no problems with Canada. if we saw in Parliament people holding up an American flag, that would mean something to me. And okay. I also, if the people of that country were like, that's a little much, and it was their money, I would spend 0 seconds being offended that the people of Great Britain were like, you don't need to be waving other countries' flags in our representative body of government. I just think that the Ukrainian flag, when you see the people supporting it, people need a cause to rally behind. And it's not about the specifics of the cause. It's about the need for a common goal, a common purpose. And when I'm looking at what the Democrats who oppose Republicans, you know, that's a very basic way of explaining politics. When I'm looking at Democrats and what they oppose, they don't even oppose Republicans. They oppose Trump. And they view Trump as opposition to Zelensky, and they're choosing Zelensky. They're choosing Ukraine. And they're doing it by trying to shiny objects say, you're either pro-Ukraine or you are pro-Russia. You are either pro-Zelensky or you are pro-Putin. If you are not advocating publicly with your 15 pieces of flair on your TGI Fridays vest, TGI Fridays, like, what do we do? Are they still around?
Not in Illinois.
Oh, no. Yeah, they are.
Well, not in Fairview. Aren't they going under?
Well, you know, Fairview, Illinois. It's all the same.
Yeah.
Just, that's
well, that's the
statement.
One I think of when I think of
it's obvious.
TGI Fridays in
Illinois. When you're not wearing your Ukrainian flag, then you've failed to profess the right amount of allegiance to the Democrat cause. The opportune advantage that the Democrats have right now. This is why I feel like there is a little bit of, I feel like the interests of all of the people who serve in the American government right now, the Democrats, I will say this as a person who voted for Donald Trump with prayer this past November. I don't think the Democrats have America's best interests at heart at all. I actually think that what the Democrats pose from a policy standpoint is anti-American. And when I see, let's just listen in here to this State of the Union interview with Senator Chris Murphy about what took place, well, the Ukraine, the Zelensky, the America, the Trump thing. I'm scratching my head a little bit.
It is absolutely shameful what is happening right now. The White House has become an arm of the Kremlin. Every single day, you hear from the National Security Advisor, from the President of the United States, from his entire national security team, Kremlin talking points. For the last week, The White House has been pretending as if Ukraine started this war. That's essentially saying that Poland invaded Germany at the beginning of World War II. There are still facts in this world. And the fact is this: Vladimir Putin is a brutal dictator. Russia started this war. And the entire pretext for that meeting yesterday was an attempt to rewrite history in order to sign a deal with Putin that hands Putin Ukraine. That is disastrous for U.S. national security. That means that China will be on the march. Putin may not stop. America may be at war with a nuclear power. And for what? For what? It appears as if America is trying to align itself with dictators, that Donald Trump wants us to have our closest.
Just to interject here, Zelensky has, this is an important piece of information. He's canceled elections.
Yes.
The people of Ukraine, he keeps saying, like, Lindsey Graham's like, you need to step down. And Zelensky replied, if you want to have your voice be heard in this matter, you need to move to Ukraine so that you can vote. Well, the people of Ukraine can't vote him out right now. He canceled elections. And I'm asking myself right now, if we were at war and Trump's like, I'm canceling elections, it would be bad for the country if we changed administrations midstream. I'm canceling elections to see this thing through. What would they call him? A dictator. They already do. They already call him a dictator. So when we're talking about dictators here, we can't have one definition of dictator for one person and another definition of a dictator for another person. When you look at the Democrats fawning over Zelensky, and Eric Schmidt said this when we talked to him at 12:45, he goes, every room Zelensky walks into, they stand up and applaud for him. I understand that after Russia. I mean, I remember vividly watching that, covering what was taking place when Russia invaded Ukraine and seeing what a lot of that looked like in the midst of the initial thrash of war from Russia. I understand wholeheartedly the support of Ukraine and wanting to watch Ukraine push back. But we've had people on this show over the years that this has been taking place, explaining that Ukraine in no way, shape or form has the structure to push back against Russia, that this was going to end up being very bad. And the only way to push back from it being a total annihilation is with support from other countries, which turned out to be us, among other countries who have provided some sort of help or financial support, but not in the capacity that we have. There's no way that Ukraine survives this without the help of America. But when you're this far into it, it's 2025, when you're 3+ years into this, I mean, does Zelensky get to walk into rooms for the rest of his life while he's under attack from Russia and be applauded for being a wartime president when he's canceled elections, had the opportunity for peace, and he mocked it and had to leave the White House because of it? I mean, at what point do you look at Zelensky and say, shame on you? You missed the boat. And, you know, when I asked that question of Eric Schmidt, or kind of made that comment at the end, kind of wanted to see what he'd say about it, it almost makes me feel like maybe Zelensky has something to gain from something other than peace, because that's what his behavior is exemplifying here.
You said it before that this is always framed as, well, you're either for Zelensky or you're for Putin. Another way that that's framed is you're either for democracy, Ukraine, or dictatorship, Russia. And you just said it. They're not even having elections.
They're not a democracy.
That's not a democracy.
No.
And in fact, if you are like, well, but there's a lot of apologists saying, well, but, you know, in a time of war, you can't really have elections. Do you know how many countries have had elections in times of war? I would look to our historians, and there are many. There are many, many that they do not cancel elections just because there's a war. In fact, that's a reason for an election. That's a time for a population to say, we either like the route that you're taking us, or no, we think you're doing a terrible job. We want to go this way.
Have that election, win, and you've got a mandate.
Yes.
Here's more from Murphy.
Relationships with despots all around the world, because that makes it easier for him to transition America into a kleptocratic oligarchy where Elon Musk and Donald Trump rule and steal from the American people. If we were allied with democracies, that would be.
Can we just pause this for a second and talk about Donald Trump and Elon Musk ruling America so they can steal from? Did he just say steal from the American
steal
people?
From Americans?
All they're doing is getting the money back for the American people. And they said the whole time in the campaign that that's what they were going to do. And America goes, that I'm voting for that. Give me that. Give me back my money. Give us back our sovereignty. Give the government back to the people. America first. And they said they were going to do it. America said, we support you in doing that. Go do it. They did it. And now Murphy's like, Trump is a Putin-like dictator. It's ridiculous.
But if the United States' closest partner is Russia, then it makes it a lot easier for Donald.
That's not even true. The United States' closest partner is not Russia. Donald Trump. Okay, I'm not going to take any more from this because we got to take a break and get to Will Chamberlain here in a second. But before we do, all Democrats care about is politics. All Democrats did during their 4 years of administration was react to what was going on in the world, even when the world was burning to the ground, when hurricanes were smashing into the coast, when people were flooding across our southern border. All they did was lick their fingers, stick it in the wind, and wait to see what the political move they needed to do that day was. They don't lead on anything. They don't guide on anything. Their policy is politics only. There's no separation between the two. That becomes all talk, no walk. And look where it gets us. How ironic that the entire conflict in Ukraine, the entire invasion of Ukraine by a dictator in Russia named Vladimir Putin wouldn't have even happened if they would have had some kind of spine to stop it from happening. Do you remember Minor Incursion? Minor Incursion. That there is from the guy. The guy who was in charge or whomever was puppeteering him through the 4 years that he was in the Oval Office. None of this would even be happening. Putin wouldn't be in the position to have to be talked to by the new guy because we sent the other party packing. None of this would have happened if the Democrats wouldn't have botched the whole thing, in my opinion, on purpose. They're not bad at what they do. They're really good at what they do, and they've profited from it the entire time. And now they're going to go on their Sunday shows, and just all they want to do is try Trump to dictator. That's all that they need to do. And they think that that's enough. Because they only care about enriching themselves, the politics of themselves, and they're willing to do anything to get there. It's absolutely shameful. And Donald Trump, he's walk. And yeah, he'll talk, but he's unafraid. And it's so refreshing. I don't know what happens next with this, but Lord knows we'll be able to watch and see. We're going to take a quick break. Will Chamberlain's going to be with us when we come back. There's a lot of talk over these Doge cuts, a lot of legal challenges against Donald Trump, Elon Musk, of course. They love to hate Elon Musk pretty much as much as Trump now. Is Donald Trump in a position to be able to see this through? And is Doge going to continue to fight the legal battles that have been thrown at them successfully? Unsuccessfully. Will Chamberlain, among some other questions for him when we come back. Don't go away.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Don't miss your window of opportunity. Upgrade your space now during Blinds.com's anniversary sale and save up to 50% site-wide. Blinds.com. Elevate your windows with the number one online retailer of custom window treatments. Blinds.com offers hundreds of premium window treatment options. Choose from woven wood and Roman shades to blinds, motorized shades, and more. All designed to fit your budget without sacrificing quality. Blinds.com brings the showroom to you with free virtual consultations and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Our design experts can help schedule a professional measure and installation, plus guidance for DIYers too. Blinds.com has been trusted for 29 years, earning thousands of five-star reviews. Shop with confidence, knowing you'll get upfront pricing, no hidden fees, and Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. But hurry, these savings won't last. Shop Blinds.com's anniversary sale happening right now for up to 50% off site-wide. Save up to 50% site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season two on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season one and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season two.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Annie Price Show. We appreciate you being with us this afternoon. I am excited to bring our next guest onto the show. Will Chamberlain, senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. We talked to him quite a bit, especially when it comes to legal things that are hitting in the news. Will, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you here.
Always good to be with you, Annie.
I wanted to ask you about a lot of the there's several topics I'd like to touch on with you, depending on the time that we have with you. But one of the things that people are emailing me a lot about, the Doge cuts. I have a lot of people who listen to the show. They tell me they voted for Trump. They are Republicans, and they are getting starting to get a little concerned about where Elon Musk is taking Doge. And there's, of course, a lot of legal challenges that they are having to face in these efforts. I wanted you to get your legal thoughts on where Elon Musk is really doing well with what he's trying to do, or any legal challenges you think he might be facing.
I think he's doing really good in terms of they're going after USAID, which is not just a giant waste of money, but it's also an enormous source of Democrat patronage. So, you know, a lot of those paid activists that you see all around the world and who are supporting left-wing parties in various countries, all of them funded by USAID, not serving the interests of the United States. They're serving the interests of the Democrat Party. So we want them gone. It's really good that he's focusing on that. And just in general, I mean, I think the basic approach here is try and find ways to reduce spending from the executive rather than from Congress. I have a big meta thought, which is, you know, we've assumed that the power of the purse is in Congress. And obviously in the Constitution, it's written that way. They control how spending is done. But question whether or not Congress is really able to actually cut spending effectively because they don't really understand what's going on. They don't have the resources to do line by line audits as, you know, congressmen, and the bodies are so large that there's always somebody that can be kind of bought off or negotiated with to preserve an element of spending. And you think about, you know, where are states where budgets are balanced? It's where there's a line item veto in the executive because it's, you know, the executive's one person. He's an entity that can control spending. Well, what I kind of see Elon doing is sort of imposing, finding ways to do what a line item veto does just under the constraints of the federal system. He's trying to find places where Congress has not specific, you know, said, here, agency, have all this money, but then not directed where it needs to go. And the agency, if you're Doge and you're the agency, you can just say, well, we're just not going to spend it and we'll return it to the FISC because you haven't directly said where you insist that we spend it. And so if you find enough of those, maybe that's the simplest way to actually reduce spending, because Congress can't do it. They're stuck making these top line cuts that are super unpopular, that they just can't get past. So I sort of maybe the power of purse really isn't the executive. Maybe that's where the ability to cut spending really lies.
Will Chamberlain speaking with us right now, senior counsel at the Article 3 Project. You can go to article3project.org to learn more about their organization. Will, when people on the left, you know, there's a rallying cry for Democrats that have now been able to parse their hatred for Donald Trump and put a little bit in the Elon Musk bucket. Seems like it's somewhat evening out that who knew they had more hatred to dispel. A lot of the protests are saying that Elon Musk is, you know, this some sort of monarch or a dictator or something who's coming in and making the decisions unelected. Does Elon Musk have authority under the president of the United States to do the things that he is doing?
Sure, because the president has the authority and he's an advisor to the president. You know, the president ultimately, since he's an advisor within the White House, it's not him doing anything. It's the president doing all these things. Right. The president issuing executive orders. It's just hit people under him informing the agencies of the will of the president who supervises them. Like I can explain a little bit how this works from personal experience when I was working in the Florida governor's office and I was working with senior advisors to Governor DeSantis. And we would often have meetings with the heads of agencies. Florida Department of Health, Florida Department of Transportation, you name Florida Department of Law Enforcement, you name it. We would be meeting with those agencies and it would be advisors to the governor basically telling the agency heads what to do. Those advisors to the governor were not elected. But those advisors to the governor, you know, the governor's a busy person. They stand for the governor in the relationships with the government departments. And effectively they're above them, right? Even though they're unelected and even though they're not Senate confirmed, they're above the agency heads, because if they're speaking for the president from the White House, they're speaking for the boss. So that's the dynamic. The way to understand this is Elon is speaking for Trump,
right,
in a way that is distinct from any of the agency heads who do have their own kind of independent voice, but they still report to the president.
And the president would have to bear the benefit and the consequence of the actions of the people who he puts in his stead to do this. Because, of course, President Trump cannot be doing the all of the work. I don't even know how Elon Musk does it, honestly, but he can't be diving in and doing the things that Elon Musk has. Plus, it seems to me like Elon Musk has, what would you say, a certain set of skills to be able to go into systems and to pull out information from those systems at a more rapid pace because of his IQ, probably, but also his tech understanding, that this is common practice in administrations with presidential authority, the executive powers. But it's just usually probably not this public and, you know, public facing, because Elon Musk is kind of quite a character. I would assume that these types of things, like you're saying, happens in the Florida government. It happens in federal government all of the time.
It happens in every state government and every federal government, because the president himself cannot be everywhere at once and he cannot be speaking to every agency at once. His time is incredibly scarce. Even more scarce in the United States, because the president is also the head of state. So there's all sorts of diplomatic responsibilities that in European governments, where you have a division between the head of state and the head of government, the head of state handles all the foreign visits and diplomatic niceties, whatever. But in the United States, those roles are merged in the president. As a result, he's extraordinarily busy. His time is very, very scarce. So he hires staff to represent him and speak for him in particular, to speak for him in dealing with the sprawling mass of the federal government and all these different agencies.
Yeah, hires and fires. If it becomes no longer in the interest of the president, they're gone. If they're not going to serve at the pleasure of the president, then they are removed or replaced. Of the many things that we see President Trump having to work on, promises that he has made that he's trying to keep and is doing, in my opinion, a pretty good job of securing the southern border, trying to restore safety and security to the country. One of those things is obviously trying to broker peace in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to give you the opportunity to comment. I've got a specific question here on the corruption that might exist in Ukraine and the American taxpayer dollar that's being just shipped over to Ukraine to maintain Ukraine's status in this war. I don't know that it's helping them win, but maybe it's slowing them losing. What kind of American interest exists in Ukraine? And what is your thoughts on Donald Trump's advocacy in his mind from an America First position?
I think there's sort of a general high level interest in Russia not being able to roll over Europe. Right. That's, I think, the sort of highest level interest. It would not be good for us if Russia was able to roll its tanks all the way to, you know, Portugal. That would be bad. So we don't want Russia to do that. We want, and since they're currently at war with Ukraine, we don't want, you know, we have an interest in Ukraine, Russia not advancing any further. That's true as well. And then we also have an interest in the war ending. We have an interest in the war, the conflict coming to an end, because there's obviously a risk of escalation, a risk of Russia going after NATO. Like, peace is very much in the United States' interest here. So those are the side of two big high level interests that we would have in Ukraine. We want to make sure we do have an interest in Putin not getting more territory. We also have an interest in the war ending. So Trump's pursuing those. He wants peace. He wants Zelensky to agree to a peace deal. But it also explains the minerals deal, which, you know, might seem weird from a MAGA perspective, because we're kind of like, why are we still getting further involved? Well, the answer is it's sort of a soft security guarantee. If we have U.S. corporations and U.S. civilians on the ground in Ukraine working to make money, that's sort of a tripwire for Russia if they think about invading ever again, because they would think, oh, we will bring the United States into this. So, but there's ambiguity there to not force World War III. So it's kind of, that's part of the idea. There's also, you know, giving America a more concrete economic interest in Ukraine, which I think is good for them long in terms of facilitating their long-term development. So that's the point of the minerals deal. But what Zelensky is doing is he's making clear that he is not going to further the core United States interest here, which is peace. We want peace. And that's, we prioritize that above Ukraine being restored to all of its sovereign territory. For good reason, it's not, you know, it's not a core strategic interest whether or not we control Crimea or Russia controls Crimea. So I think Zelensky is making a huge mistake here. Our interests are not so strong that we're going to really tolerate the kind of disrespect that he showed in the Oval Office to President Trump. Our interests are not so strong that we're going to forget all the conduct of the Ukrainian government over the past 5 to 6 years. Let's not forget, that's where the frivolous Ukraine impeachment came from, was a conversation with Zelensky that Joe Biden and had his crackhead son on a board of a Ukrainian oil and gas company, expertise unknown why he would get that job except for influence peddling purposes. Joe Biden bragged about getting a Ukrainian prosecutor fired. Ukrainian officials worked with the Hillary Clinton campaign to start this whole Russiagate nonsense in the first instance. So, you know, the relationship with the American right and Ukraine is very fraught, and we're still, you know, I mean, Republicans are mature, Trump is mature, so he's saying, okay, you know, there, we do have some high-level strategic interests that should trump our, you know, our general more partisan annoyances, but that only goes so far. If you're just going to show up to the White House in a tracksuit and be assholes to our face, then, like, go away and solve the problem of Russia on your own.
Yeah, I think it's so important to understand the depths with which this relationship is complicated with Ukraine. It's not just as simple as the Democrats on the surface. They want you to believe it's a very simple question. You are either for Zelensky / Ukraine or you are pro Putin. And people are very eager to tie Donald Trump to Putin. They've been lying about it for years and years at this point. So I don't know why they would stop now. I want to highlight a post that you put up on X within the last hour, because I think it's so spot on. Democrats don't get the problem with Zelensky's behavior in the Oval Office because they would conduct themselves in the exact same obnoxious way if they ever had the opportunity to sit down with Trump and Vance. I'm going to let you elaborate a little bit on that post, but also get your thoughts on how Trump and Vance, you know, they showed a little bit of passion in that interchange. They didn't try to soften the tone or bring it back to center. They kind of decided, no, we're going to fight back. And I'm curious if you think if that was really on behalf of the American people.
I think it was on behalf of the American people. I think there's a sense in which he was behaving so obnoxiously. Like, he was asked to wear a suit.
True.
And it really would have been a good smart move for him to wear a suit, even if he hasn't been doing so in the past, because it would be a gesture of goodwill and it to sort of acknowledge the kind of fraught relationship we've had and to say, like, I'm going to show you a lot of respect. You've asked me to wear a suit. I'm going to wear a suit for the first time in 5 years or 3 years or whatever it's been since the war started. But he didn't do that. And I think that it's really remarkable because I feel, Scott Adams talks sometimes about watching two movies on the same screen. And that's the way I feel with this Zelensky thing, because to me, it's just blatantly obvious watching the clip from the very get-go that he was wildly out of line, that Zelensky is, we are the patron, Zelensky is the person, the beneficiary of our patronage. And as a result, like, show some respect, show some gratitude. don't be obnoxious. Don't contradict us on camera in front of everybody else. Like, because it's not a debate round. Like, I think that I saw a lot of people, some of the pro-Ukraine voices, they're saying, well, Zelensky was right about this, that, or the other thing. And I'm like, whether or not that's true, it's irrelevant. It's not, that's not what that meeting was. This is a, I think Scott Jennings had a great line where he's like, his job was just to sit there,
yeah,
say, yes, Mr. President, thank you, Mr. President, sign the deal and have lunch. That was his job. And he couldn't do that. And, you know, there's also a big American interest in, like, we want to be respected. We don't want to be taken for granted. We don't want to be exploited by people who are obnoxious to us, because I mean, that affects how all our relationships work going forward. And I mean, maybe he's used to, you know, endless supplicating from European capitals and from the Biden administration, but that's certainly not going to come from the American right. Again, we're willing to look past some of the stuff we've really not liked about the conduct of the Ukrainian government over the past 5 years, because we recognize there are high level strategic interests. But you don't get to be an ingrate anymore. We're not going to put up with it.
Yeah, we're speaking with Will Chamberlain, and I just think, when I'm thinking about this, I have to ask myself, either Zelensky wants peace and wants the Ukrainian people to stop having to shed their blood on Ukrainian ground, and he'd be looking to do that in any way, shape, or form that he could, or if his actions consistently conflict with the outcome of peace, I have to ask myself, what is there to gain for Zelensky in the event that peace is in a
chance? I have this theory that he thinks Ukraine is more popular in the United States than it is. And he thinks that if he has enough leverage over Trump to bend Trump to his will, that's the only way his conduct makes sense to me.
Well, that's narcissism.
And he's mistaken. You know, the thought here is, well, you can see those polls that show that more American, you know, if you were forced to choose between Ukraine and Russia, we choose Ukraine. It's like, yeah, no kidding. We like you more than Vladimir Putin. Do you want a cookie? Like, that's not an impressive accomplishment. When you see the polls that look like, do you think we're giving too much support to Ukraine? Yes. Do you want to wrap up the war? Yes. Like, the actual substance of the Trump foreign policy position is widely popular in the United States, 60% roughly. So he's just wildly not underestimating American public opinion. He doesn't get that he's not that popular here anymore, that we want to see an end to the war, that our patience is running out. And I think in some ways he might be disturbed by the American media, which hasn't really given effective voice to the sort of realist, skeptical Ukraine position. So, you know, he's reading the Wall Street Journal, he's reading the New York Times, everybody loves Ukraine. And so he assumes that he just has some sort of PR leverage with the public, that the American public, that he doesn't have.
And the benefit of Donald Trump, in large part on pretty much all issues, is that he is not, he is above playing the game that the media sets out, or that the political party through the media has been able to set out, which is, the game is it Zelensky or Putin? And Trump's like, that's not even the question. I'm not even answering it. I'm over here. You can come meet me when you're ready. And it's made a huge difference in being able to be America first, not just in word, but also in practice.
Yeah, that's exactly right. He doesn't care what the media says. He doesn't care about the media games. He knows his position is broadly popular anyway.
Yeah.
And he also wants to be a peacemaker. And I mean, he was totally right about the fact that, you know, if you actually want to be a neutral broker or a broker of a peace deal, you stop insulting your adversary.
Amen.
You stop insulting the guy. You may think that, but you stop insulting him. Show some tact, show some actual diplomacy, which, again, Zelensky seems incapable of doing because he can't help but pick fights with Trump and Vance for no reason.
Yeah. Well, Will, your thoughts on this are welcomed here on the Annie Fry Show, and watching, you know, the Doge stuff happening and Elon Musk doing what he's doing while Trump is over here having conversations with Zelensky, securing the southern border, going to have a joint address tomorrow. There's so much to talk about, and your thoughts are always welcome here. So we appreciate you. Thanks for being with us.
All right. Always happy to do it. Thank you.
Talk to you again soon. Will Chamberlain with the Article 3 Project. Love having him on and his insights. And he's so right when he's talking about the way Donald Trump is approaching this and the way Zelensky's behaved. It's right there out in front of your own eyes. And the one thing that the media always wants to do is make sure that you don't use your own thoughts, your own brain, to observe what's happening. And if what it looks like looks bad for the left or the agenda-driven media, they will work in lockstep to try to change your perception. We'll see how it works. Right now, it feels like Donald Trump has been winning in the media, not just in the elections. But there will be a lot. There will be a lot to continue to cover. Joint address to Congress taking place tomorrow. And we're going to have all the thoughts prepared for that. We've got great guests lined up to react to it before and afterwards as well. 97.1 FM Talk will be covering it front to back. Let's take a quick break. Go vote in the YouTube live chat poll. Who won the Trump-Zelensky Oval Office confrontation? Trump, Zelensky, Russia, or no one? Annie Fry YouTube channel, youtube.com/@AnnieFry to vote. Leave a comment. Tell us what you think and why you think that. Let's see. Scoot says Putin won. Dirk said, I chose no one. The results have yet to be seen. And G said, I don't know that anyone was the winner. Trump definitely came across as the elder statesman. Zelensky came across as a spoiled little brat standing there with his hand out. You agree? We'll be right back.
This is the Annie Fry Show. Find the podcast, on-demand audio, and more at 971talk.com/Annie.
I hear the drums echoing tonight, and she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight. Moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped and
Wiggins! Oh!
Monday Roundup!
This here's the wildest ride in the wilderness!
Can anybody name any other songs by Toto before we move into the Monday Roundup?
Hold the line. Europe.
Very good joke. Very correct answer by Ethan. Hold the line.
Hold the line.
That one. Can you believe that's them? Different sound. It's almost like a different era of rock that they performed those two songs in.
I'm shocked.
Africa, Hold the Line, and Rosanna. Those are pretty much the three. That's it.
I don't even know that one.
I bought their greatest hits thinking, oh man, I know those three. And that was it.
Imagine we were having this conversation instead of Eric Schmidt. At 12:45.
He could have come back at 1:45.
He would have probably talked the entire segment about it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He probably would have had a lot to add.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right.
What are you doing?
The Monday Roundup.
Let's go.
There we go. Tim Walz says he may run for president in 2028.
That's good. I hope he does.
Me too. anything to add to hoping Tim Walz runs in 2028?
Yeah. Where do I make a donation?
You know what it does say, though? He's not going to run for the open Minnesota seat. The Senate seat. So
okay,
that's kind of because the Minnesotans know.
Minnesotans.
They know. Yeah, he's just
relying on the stupidity of the rest of the uninformed country.
Did you see that he was on a podcast last week, and there was a clip of him basically saying that Trump talking about the Haitian migrants eating the cats and dogs.
They're eating the cats.
He was using that. Trump was using that as bait for the Democrats, and he said that he feels really dumb for spending three or four days talking about that.
Do you remember last week? When we had on Jonathan Lucroy on the show, and he was talking about, I believe it was his Venezuelan counterparts, colleagues in Major League Baseball, who during the protests are like, "Why do these people?" And he did a little. He's like, why do these people hate your country, bro? And he's like, I don't know. He goes, I wish he didn't name the baseball player, but he said, in my country, he basically said they're eating dogs and cats.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I thought the same thing when I heard that. I'm like, well, there we go. Subtext of this Tim Walz says he's running for president is Tim Walz actually running for transportation secretary. Thank you very much. I will be here until Friday, actually, and then I'll take a weekend just like normal. New technology would allow people to taste in virtual reality. Have you ever seen an advertisement with food that looks so good that you just wanted to go through your screen and taste it?
No.
Scientists are working
on
making
had that, experience.
That dream a reality. It's called the e-taster, and it differs from other e-tasting that has been attempted in the past that was just shock your tongue. Apparently, that exists. Didn't know it until I read this article.
Have you ever had that experience? You wanted to go through the TV and just...
Every single time I see an ad.
He
for
eats what?
Like
for
anything.
What's the most attractive food you can see on TV?
Probably cake. Is it cake? Is it cake? Like when I see it cake on TV, I wonder first, is it cake? Oh, and then when they cut it, I'm like, I want to eat that cake. even though it looks like a shoe.
I don't care if that's a chair that woman was just sitting on. I'd like a bite.
It's a good one. Have you ever seen the Is It Cake parodies where somebody puts two cakes next to each other and one of them was made, it looks like by a third grader.
Like a Duncan Hines like box cake.
It's not even close. And they're going, which one is cake?
Is the answer ever no?
to looking at something on TV and wanting to eat it?
No. Is it cake? Go on. Next question. Or whatever we're doing right now.
Well, just to let you know, whatever this e-taster is like a bunch of different tastes put into, I don't know, like liquid form, and then they pump those tastes into your mouth as you're seeing it.
I think I'm a big no on this.
Yeah,
you know
like
how
that.
Like when you get artificial flavored anything and you're like, oh, it kind of suggests strawberry. What is strawberry flavor? Nothing that's ever strawberry flavored ever tastes like strawberry. This would all be artificial flavor to hint at something. It's never going to taste.
Yeah. How I can see like, oh, that tastes like strawberries or buttered popcorn. But then you go, oh, I'm looking at a pork tenderloin, you know? Mm. What are you going to get out of that tube? It's going to be like, oh, yeah.
Hard pass.
So there's a tube in your mouth? Is that how they, I'm trying to figure out how they pump the taste
into your mouth. Yeah, and I think it kind of spritzes. It's kind of like a mister. Something it's
at the movie theater. You just set it down in the chair for the next person when they come in.
Well, they're actually trying this with virtual reality more than regular screens. Skype is shutting down after 2 decades.
Oh, no. How are we going to video call people like we just did with Will Chamberlain on the
8.5 billion, not quite that much. It was billions of dollars that they paid for this in 2009, Microsoft. And it just didn't grow. It was $8.5 billion in cash that Microsoft bought this for. And after 14 years, it's just dwindled and dwindled and dwindled. And I guess Skype wasn't the choice of video conferencing starting in 2020. Everybody used all these different ones. And man, what a loss that is.
I saw a great tweet the other day. Basically, it was retweeting that post saying they were shutting down. And it said, Skype went into COVID with a 3-1 series lead. And they somehow blew that.
It's true. Like, why did we not think, oh, this is Skype's time to shine? It was all these other ones.
No one had heard of Zoom, really. It's like, oh, Zoom,
right.
Okay.
Right, last one real quick. 2 strands of Kurt Cobain's hair expected to fetch thousands of dollars at a new punk-themed auction.
Yes.
The last time any strands of hair from Kurt Cobain were sold at auction, they went for over $14,000 back in 2021. Apparently this is a thing.
What do you do with them?
I think you probably...
I think you don't ask that question.
Wear them.
Oh, man. Donald Trump is talking right now at the White House. A big announcement on a chip investment. Did you say Taiwan? Is that what I heard?
Taiwan, yeah.
Taiwan, $100 billion, I believe it was. But he's also taking questions. And when we come back, we're going to bring those questions at that press conference to you. I'll give you a hint. Zelensky came up. We'll be right back.